You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
A number of opportunities for master's-level pharmacologists exist in the pharmaceutical industry, biotechnology companies, government agencies, research laboratories, and academic programs. Introducing the Master of Science in Pharmacology program from the University of California, Irvine, UCI. The knowledge acquired in the Master of Science in Pharmacology program would also benefit those seeking employment in industry or advancement in teaching, technical and scientific writing, patenting, or pharmaceutical sales and marketing. Fall registration is now open. Apply today at sites.uci.edu/mspharmacology to learn more and reserve your seat by June 15th, 2020. That's sites.uci.edu/mspharmacology and reserve your seat today. The deadline is June 15th, 2020.
Pharmacy Podcast Nation. Pharmacy Podcast Network. Welcome back for another episode. I'm the founder of the Pharmacy Podcast, Todd Urey. 2009 is such an eon and long time ago. Goodness gracious, it's been 11 years. And part of the dedication to you, the pharmacist, the pharmacy professional, is that we bring other participants to the podcast platform, other thought leaders that aren't necessarily in pharmacy or for that matter, even in healthcare. If you remember, John Nosta, who I call my digital health godfather, has been on our program several times and just done some amazing explanation of what digital health means to him and being a philosopher and a world speaker. And John Rossman, who was one of the writers of many different books on business, including his own series called The Amazon Effect. He's one of the founders of Amazon way back in the day. He was on, and I want to welcome today someone that is special to healthcare because of what we know as drug development is changing at the speed of light and how artificial intelligence is being leveraged to accelerate, repeat, collect, and use data in drug development. Daniel Fagella is here today from Emerge Technologies. Emerge is an amazing artificial intelligence company that doesn't just focus on drug development. Daniel, welcome to the Pharmacy Podcast.
Todd, glad to be here with you.
So I tell you what, you're a fellow podcaster, you're a researcher, you're someone who's dove deep into artificial intelligence. Give our listeners just a little bit about yourself and Emerge so that we can kind of set the table to dig into our topic today.
Yeah, sure. Happy to do so. So the name of the company is Emerge Artificial Intelligence Research. And for those of you listening in, you can kind of think about us like a Forrester or a Gartner. We are a market research company. We help enterprises make smarter decisions in terms of technology investments. But we have a pretty narrow focus, and that focus is the ROI of AI. And a lot of our work is in life sciences and financial services. So going back to our earliest years, you know, 3 years back, our first kind of big healthcare client was a U.S. subsidiary of an Asian pharma giant, and that really got us walking down the path. And now we're, you know, speaking for the World Bank on topics around AI and healthcare around the world and working with some rather large firms to help them pick the right vendor and pick high ROI AI projects. So I definitely don't come to you as a pharmacist, Todd, as you mentioned, but as a market research guy with a view as to what's working and where the investments should be going for AI, that's kind of my take, and that's what we do at Emerge.
So, Daniel, you mentioned the World Bank, which has been impacted by what we're all facing right now, and hope and prayers is that we're coming to the end of this COVID-19 debacle. But I read a very interesting article out about Emerge and your insights on COVID-19 and the pandemic, which has just been so disruptive on levels that none of us have really ever experienced. Yeah. So how did Emerge, how did you guys come out with the topic that you did about 4 months ago, which was titled Artificial Intelligence for Pandemic Response and Outbreak Tracking?
Yeah, well, you know, part of it was simply two factors. I mean, number one, our readers were kind of make sense, probably your listeners as well. We run a podcast called the AI in Business Podcast, where we cover AI use cases across sectors. And listeners, readers, everybody was sort of, hey, what does this giant world-changing event mean for me? So we had plenty on the editorial calendar that didn't necessarily have to do with COVID. But because it was such a big deal, we just decided, hey, you know, we're studying healthcare in depth. We did a very robust research project for the World Bank in 2018 on mobile diagnostics. So I probably examined more mobile AI diagnostic companies than you could conceivably shake a stick at and understand that space in depth. We've looked at drug development in great depth, and we've looked at some technologies around predicting pandemics. We did an article on AI and epidemiology that was maybe 3,000 words long, maybe 2.5 years ago. So we've been tracking this space for a while, and it seemed like, why don't we bundle together topics people care about and write something pretty big? So that was a few months back. And fortunately, that stuff's been well received. I think everybody's trying to figure out what's new, how does this affect my strategy? And we try to be there for guidance, because that's what we do.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really good stage setter to be able to dive into today's topic. And that is artificial intelligence impact on drug development and how we unpack that subject, because you and I could talk about this for hours and hours and days. But if we were to kind of jump into the reasoning for this, and the reason that I invited you as a leader in artificial intelligence and Emerge as a real pioneer in this, as well as innovators in using artificial intelligence for multiple different reasons, this of course being drug development. We saw that there was a study done by Fierce Pharma that said that Johnson & Johnson is the largest pharmaceutical firm by revenue, which is right around that $82.1 billion in 2019. Yeah. And Emerge and Johnson & Johnson did something special together, and I wanted you to describe that to our listeners, and then I have some follow-up questions.
Yeah, sure. We've covered J&J for a long time. I think my first article analyzing J&J and Roche and the big players was sometime in late 2016. We've since then worked with a number of pharma subsidiaries. J&J is not currently a client, but we've been in touch with some of their folks for interviews and whatnot. And we recently did an article called Artificial Intelligence at Johnson & Johnson. So if you type that into Google and you type Emerge, so E-M-E-R-J, you're likely to find our recent piece about where J&J is putting their dollars. Pretty early days, pretty nascent investments, but it's a nice overview of where things are headed.
Well, that's interesting, and I'm going to have that in the show notes. So in specialty pharmacy specifically, Daniel, we'll have applications, programs that will allow a technician or a pharmacist to dig down into the disease state and the impact that a medication in stages has on a patient. And then they'll catalog some of those outcomes, which are repeated in patients over and over again. A layman's term example, because I'm not a pharmacist. I'm pharmacist number one fan, but not a pharmacist. For example, if I was giving you a drug called the ABC drug, and normally on the third day of taking ABC, you started feeling nauseated, that outcome would then be cataloged. And then basically the technician or the pharmacist follow-up might call the patient and say, hey, Dan, are you feeling nauseated today, or are you having any nausea today? And on a scale from 1 to 10, how nauseated are you? And you may say, oh, I'm a 3. Okay, that information's being cataloged. And that's, of course, extremely infantile to where artificial intelligence has grown to use that cataloged information to start making predictive analytics forward, so that a consultant type pharmacist could look down the pathway of a medication in your second year, in your fifth year, in your 10th year, to really be able to see how is this medication impacting the patient's condition, but more importantly, what effects on a long-term basis is this ABC drug having on your kidneys, on your liver, on your stomach, on your esophagus, on your brain tissues, and so on and so forth. So for the listener's perspective and kind of breaking it down like that, how does artificial intelligence utilize data to help a clinical trials group or a development group use data and use information and use the technology to help us move forward with more accuracy, but then also faster in getting medications to market?
Yeah, so there's a lot to unpack in that question, and there's also a good deal to unpack. And I think some of the things you were sort of hinting at with your previous example. So I'd like to kind of dive right in here. Just in terms of sort of where the money is going and where we're seeing action. So in the drug development process, sort of the very earlier phases around kind of drug discovery and preclinical work, is generally right now where the preponderance of investment seems to be going, where sort of the drug development AI investments seem to be most hot to trot. Once we get to clinical trials and FDA review and, you know, marketing and monitoring after the fact, there's significantly less in terms of current investment in AI going to those kinds of applications. So when we talk about where it's impacting drug development and that life cycle, we're really looking at drug discovery and preclinical sort of work by and large, not entirely, but by and large. You know, we've looked at 122 companies in this space and, you know, $3 billion, well over $3 billion raised. And those are kind of the meta trends. Now we can go ahead and go a little bit deeper into this. One thing that you brought up that I really want to kind of put a push pin in is around, hey, you know, let's say somebody takes a drug and then they feel nauseous and we can record that information and then maybe we could use AI to sort of, you know, predict what other people might, how other folks might respond to that particular drug. Data is very, very, very challenging in this space. So healthcare is really complicated. Let me explain sort of why. So let's pretend we're in an e-commerce space. So e-commerce is a lovely universe because everything is digital, everything is in bits. And so AI is just rife and frolics freely in the e-commerce world, not to mention the fact that those companies are all digitally native, while a firm like Bayer, we could say, is probably not digitally native. They certainly have many smart people, but that's not their modus operandi. They're you know, working on getting there. So if we're in an e-commerce firm, and we're collecting a bunch of data about sort of somebody's buyer's journey, you know, what emails did they open? What products did they click and add to their cart? And then which ones did they buy? And then 3 months later, which ones did they buy? Those are all pretty coherent data points of actual things that happened in our digital ecosystem that we can track and then use to predict and inform the behavior of other users so we can maybe drive a higher cart value. Now, in your example, when we talk about, well, someone took a drug and then they were nauseous, here we get into the really spooky world of AI and healthcare. And I really do need to draw the line here. I think a lot of the time when we get brought into the C-suite, the assumption is Dan is going to put together his pom-poms and tell us about how AI is going to transform everything. But a lot of the time, Dan is going to say what not to invest in because too many pharma companies have wasted millions in really fruitless pilot projects. So to touch on your point, then I'm going to see if you have any questions on this. You know, someone says they're nauseous. The challenge here with sort of the response of patients in terms of their subjective experience is that this is really, really tough to track, relatively speaking. You're going to have some patients who might just not want to tell you when they feel uncomfortable. You're going to have to call them and hope that they're not watching their kid's soccer game. They're just sitting around ready to tell you if their stomach feels like it's hurting. They may also have just had a tremendous amount of beer 2 hours earlier, and their stomach may be hurting for that reason. So attribution and the kind of data we're tracking is not the kind of hard, concrete information that we would find in other kinds of data streams. The subjectivity and fuzziness of AI and life sciences makes it exceedingly challenging, and that means we really have to limit often the narrow areas where we want to focus the canon of artificial intelligence first. Now, I know I'm really hitting you with a lot very quickly, Todd, so let me know where you want to dive in there, but there's a lot to explore in just what you've said thus far.
No, that's excellent, because what you're helping myself as well as the listeners understand is there is true science behind this, just as there is in drug development in and of itself. And understanding how a medication impacts one patient that is absorbing and breaking it down and compared to another patient is sometimes night and day. The whole science of pharmacogenomics, where we're testing how one patient is absorbing and metabolizing a medication versus another, that in of itself is going to be changing medication development and the administration of it. So I like your example back to the financial world, because it's a little bit more black and white in comparison to the impact on humanity, because of how many factors can be put into trying to help a patient through their therapy based on depression, based on other chronic disease states, based on, like you said, are they, do they just get in a fight with their spouse? Are they watching a, you know, a game of their, you know, of their niece or nephew, and so on and so forth. So what aspects or what data points can emerge, leverage in the development of drugs that could be turned over to an artificial intelligence platform program that we could kind of at least start somewhere?
Sure. And again, just to be clear, you know, we're not the ones developing the AI technology. I'm not writing Python on the weekends. I'm interviewing, you know, the founder of multi-billion dollar companies like Medidata, who are working in life sciences, and you know, companies raising hundreds of millions like Benevolent.ai, and scouring hundreds of companies. So we'll help people pick vendors, but we're certainly not the ones building the tech. We're just going to make sure money isn't wasted. That's why we're hired. But to answer the question in terms of what kinds of data might be leveraged, this is indeed the ongoing challenge. So here would be a lie. So if I were to tell you the following, it would be a lie. Todd, the pharmaceutical industry has discovered which kinds of data can reliably be used to inform or automate workflows in the pharmaceutical and life sciences space. The fact of the matter is, this is an entirely nascent domain. What I can say is the following. So when it comes to sort of looking at individual compounds, potentially looking at sort of the reaction between, you know, one compound or another, or looking back at the results of tremendous volume of sort of patients, maybe looking at placebo versus whatever the drug itself, across, you know, ideally, you know, many, many thousands of patients. Sometimes this data can be sort of lumped together and leveraged in meaningful ways. The challenge is, you know, study by study, corpus of data by corpus of data, you know, hey, do we have these patients broken down by, you know, the right criteria? Hey, you know, this time we broke race out this way, but in this other study, race was broken out this way. You know, here we did kind of an age range, while here we did the actual age as a number. And it, being able to kind of pool these resources together to say what would be statistically significant ends up being really, really challenging. But the fact of the matter is, we want to find things that are as kind of controlled and bounded as we can. Anything that fits under the sort of umbrella of subjective is spookier and spookier to use, and often can be harder and harder to kind of generalize from one study to another. We can talk about a couple instances of where this kind of data is being used, but that's honestly, that's kind of as good as an answer as we've got right now. There's a lot of people experimenting with a lot of use cases.
So I think of, you know, the consumer side of the understanding of applications of artificial intelligence. My most favorite movie based on artificial intelligence was Ex Machina. Just thought it was fascinating. And you know, even something like Chappie, which was a little more easier to understand, more action-packed, not as methodical in getting into the head of people. That's why I like complex movies. I'm not a, you know, I'm not just a, oh, you know, get me some popcorn and let me be
entertained. Yeah.
I really
think, yeah.
So in using that example, I think of, you know, forwarding artificial intelligence or having an organization kind of even predict in itself where it will be to help accelerate with quality so that we don't lose quality in developing specific medications, and the whole 3D printing of different electronic pieces or puzzle pieces or construction or engineering, and how 3D printing has really changed the game, even in architecture, for example. So when I think of artificial intelligence, the real side of artificial intelligence, not the make-believe,
sci-fi stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. But when I see that, it's still quite exciting because of the acceleration of prediction of data in outcomes, because we do have medications on the market that we know long-term effects on someone's pancreas or liver. So I look at artificial intelligence as being able to accelerate those outcomes so that pharma can now build the second, third, and fourth phases of medication, which blows my mind because you think of the patent world and they patent a medication for 5 or 7 years. There's going to be trials or there's going to be phases of a medication that will change as you move through, which will now get us out of this one pill. It will be, for example, the ingestible capsule by eTechRx, where you ingest it. It has the substance in it. As soon as it hits the stomach acid, it disintegrates. It now starts talking by a microchip that's embedded in this capsule. It starts talking to your iPhone, and your iPhone sends the data to the electronic health record. I see artificial intelligence actually starting to build out the outcomes with millions and millions and millions of lines of code to feed back to the developer and saying, here's what to look out for in second phase, or here's what to look out for in fourth phase, or so on. So what in your touching of this side of artificial intelligence have you heard kind of being kicked back to you in some of your clients and saying, hey, here's where artificial intelligence is going to help us accelerate the development of medications with the highest level of quality?
Yeah, so I'll kind of be the bringer of truth here. This is a market research perspective. This is many, many companies and interviews. The fact of the matter is, if we want to boil down drug development, there's sort of three buckets that broadly at Emerge, we look at sort of the current sort of hot to trot technologies in terms of AI applications in drug development. And none of them individually are actually revolutionary. Now, if you and I have another interview in a year and a half, if there is a trend at that time that is a little bit more on the revolutionary side, I'll certainly know of it. Some of these more evolutionary developments still are, I think, harbingers of the grander shifts that I think you're articulating. But if we talk about today, generally we're not, you know, able to recommend vendors that are going to give people the wonder drug. We are going to recommend vendors that are going to help to streamline processes and do things a little bit faster. So I'm going to give you three categories. One of them is data collection. One of them is data enrichment, and the other is data search and discovery. Broadly speaking, if we talk about where is AI kind of speeding up the loops, where is AI sort of making things potentially more efficient in the drug discovery world, it's sort of those three. If you'd like, maybe I could give you an example of each.
Definitely, please do.
Great. So let's go ahead and hop in. Again, occasionally I'll use a vendor company. None of these are firms that I, you know, have a relationship with. I just happen to have a slide deck from we did a presentation for the OECD on the future of pharmaceuticals. And I pulled up that slide deck before my talk with you. So there's a company called Abby, that's ABBYY. And this is a firm that on the data collection side can sort of help to scan PDFs or images or other sort of data formats and allow them to be kind of digitally entered in really reliable and consistent ways. When we have paper documents or information coming in through different forms or through call center transcripts or call center notes or, you know, chat boxes or whatever the case may be, to be able to have an artificial intelligence system sort of reliably collect and store that data so it goes in the right format and the right way in the first place is really, really important. And even if we just look at PDFs, that might be the case. So if we have certain PDF images, this firm Abby, for example, if we have certain PDF images that we can have a human being manually label, sort of, hey, this box is this kind of information, it needs to be stored here when we scan it. This title up at the top, that's going to be this label and it needs to be appended this way, etc. We need human beings to do a good deal of this kind of labeling around how these documents should be processed. And then we can train a machine learning system to sort of read that PDF or get that random cluster of sort of garbled natural language and parse it out and store it in the right way, whether it be information about a patient or some research results or whatever the case may be, anywhere where there's garbled, disjointed, open-ended sort of data floating around within the business, that there's firms that sort of can ensure that hey, this kind of information needs to not sort of sit in a stack until Susan can come over here and type it in with her index fingers to get it into the system properly. This needs to slide its way into the system so that it's searchable, it's findable, it's reliably stored and collected. So you can imagine that, you know, doing this, number one, there it involves some training. So we're not talking about a push button here, like, oh, you scan the PDF and the AI does some magic. Nope, you manually have to work with this data and work with these workflows. But the fact of the matter is, if we can find consistent areas where data is inconsistent, or we can find areas that are really kind of holding back the workflows or being very slow in terms of their manual data entry, we can often find bottlenecks where a data collection and data intake sort of AI solution can really help to kind of speed up the flow. Again, not going to transform things by itself, but if we're talking about saving on man hours, if we're talking about saving on time, it's one of the many levers we can use with a life sciences client. Let me know if that makes sense. I can go through the other ones as well, but I want to make sure you can dive in, Todd, if you'd like to ask any more questions.
No, definitely. Continue, because what I'll do is I'll have the show notes out that will kind of categorize this discussion.
But this cool. is the meat of it. All right, so we'll get into the next example here. So the next example is around enrichment. So if we have enrichment of documents, enrichment of data means essentially layering meaning on top of data. Now, here's maybe what people have in their mind when I say that, Todd. They might think that an AI reads the document and like magically extracts and appends a bunch of labels for what this document means. That's definitely not what happens. The way that it works is human beings do the hard thinking about how they ideally want to search and discover their information. They really think about, you know, what do we want with these lab notes? You know, we don't have a single label anywhere that says oncology. We always have to search for like 16 different terms. Shouldn't we just have one label for oncology? So anything that relates to those topics should fit that way. Yeah, we should do that. Okay. And then in terms of, you know, these compounds, we have like six different names for all these different compounds. You know, what's the uniform code that we want to use for search moving forward? We don't want to type different terms into different frickin' databases. We want one darn code. What's that going to be? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So step one here, Todd, when it comes to data enrichment, is human beings asking, why is search hard? What do I want to find? How do I want to sort this information visually? Human beings need to do that. A team of human beings, generally speaking. We're talking about folks within, you know, life sciences that are actually using the data, folks with data science backgrounds who can talk about what's possible, what's working. And then once we have that idea, we can train AI systems to automatically enrich the information that we have. So there's a million vendors in this particular category. One that we have a lot of experience for, I've actually done some speaking engagements for these folks, is a pretty substantial firm in France called Cinequa. So Cinequa is a kind of search and discovery AI platform. And again, for these folks, the idea might be we could go into our lab notes and we could, you know, tag and append, let's say 100, 1,000 documents with specific terms and phrases that maybe that document has to do with, or, you know, highlight a certain area of the document and say, hey, because of this area, we want to make sure this comes up when we search for oncology. It doesn't say oncology, but here's the cluster of terms that make this relevant for oncology. So we can do a bunch of this manual human labor, and we can kind of append and apply this kind of let's say, structure, taxonomy that we want as human beings to help us with search, then what the AI can do. And again, you know, this is work. This is not, you know, push button. But once we have done some of that training, we can train a machine learning system to go back through all of our historical information. So all of our lab notes, all of our patient records, all of our, you know, whatever kind of information we're looking at, and append that same taxonomy on top of that information. So now, instead of searching for 15 terms and hoping we're finding everything related to oncology, we can have an AI system maybe not get everything, but quite reliably allow us to simply search oncology and pull up everything we want. And again, Todd, are we talking about finding the wonder drug tomorrow? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I will never tell a company that that's going to be a result. But what I will tell you, Todd, is that if we're searching for different terms and different databases and nobody can find things the way that they want to find things, and we need to reliably be able to pull up research and patient records and other things the way that we need to, data enrichment is often going to be a really nice lever to help us kind of discover what we need to discover moving forward. Let me know if that makes sense.
It does. And I think it cleans up the data to make it better to be better used. And also it kind of it replicates and it makes it the same over and over again so that you can actually continue to grow. Whereas someone manually doing it, a human being, feels great on a Monday, but on Thursday they're tired and they just want to get to the weekend. And then obviously they might not be doing as high quality of a job that you could train a program to do consistently and expeditiously over and over again. So I'm definitely following you.
Great. And the same idea of enrichment can also apply potentially to cleaning data. Now, I'm pretty familiar with Cinequa. This is not necessarily one of their main value props, but there's other companies that do things of this nature where, to your point, in addition to enrichment, we can potentially have artificial intelligence train on all the different edge cases and ways that the data has been garbled and messed up in the past, and leverage artificial intelligence to go back through our historical records and kind of fix up all the hubbub, fix up when the address was put in the wrong field, fix up when everything was done in all caps for the last name, because we don't do that anymore. We haven't done that since 2006. Fix up when X, fix up when Y. You understand what I mean. So by finding those edge cases, training an AI system on, hey, when you see this, we're going to change it to this. When you see this, we're going to put it in this bucket to be reviewed by a human being because we think that's probably wrong. When you see this, we want you to try to change it to these things. Over and over and over again, we do a lot of instances. We train the system. We can go backwards through the data. And, you know, if we do things well, and it often involves some iteration, we can end up with a cleaner data set as well. So all of that, Todd, leads us to search and discovery. Once we have things enriched, once things are coming in the right way, once they've been cleaned, and once they've been enriched in ways that really require human intelligence, the enrichment, you know, I will be honest, 85% of it is the human intelligence. Now, you do have to pick the right vendor. You do have to integrate it properly, right? We're still in business for a reason, but a lot of the smarts around how you want to sort things is really how your internal experts want to get the job done. Then you can go about search and discovery in ways that can help you move faster. So, hey, what are all of the X that's ever reacted negatively to compound Y? You know, I'm just throwing something out there. And be able to find what you want to find. Generate new ideas. Be able to find correlations in data that maybe you couldn't find correlations in before. And if we can find those little edge cases to improve workflows, you know, at this juncture and this juncture and this juncture of kind of drug development and those very early kind of preclinical processes of ideation, you know, the ultimate promise here is that that's going to help us get to the next drug and help patients faster. That's going to help us be more profitable and certainly more efficient. And I think in this post-COVID era, whether it's in life sciences or financial services, I think everybody is looking for efficiencies. Half of what we do in AI strategy right now is probably, you know, if not entirely efficiency oriented first. That's sort of like the topic on the table when it comes to strategy today. And this is certainly an opportunity to do so. So, you know, it's not going to change the process overnight, but these are the baby steps that are going to build what will be the modern pharma company of, let's say, 2025.
That's terrific. And so the category that I kind of have another question on is the search versus discovery and how artificial intelligence may be implemented to start becoming more discovery-based than search-based. Search is great, but it's the answers of not only one data point, but 1,000 data points that brings that to the surface. So can you kind of dig into that a little more?
Sure. Yeah. And again, not working on the bench all day. You know, I'm sure there's folks who could think about 100 instances of discovery. I'll have to talk in very light, high level analogies here, but yeah, so search, for example, and I think this is a good distinction, Todd, so I appreciate you asking this one. Search is you know, relatively explicit, sort of, here's what I'm looking for. So we talked about oncology, right? There might be 700 terms that relate enough to oncology that when we search for oncology, we just want to damn well find it. So that's search. Show me everything that X, bada bing, bada boom. And again, artificial intelligence can be leveraged in order to search more efficiently, search by different categories, search in a more nuanced and granular way, make sure we don't leave anything out of our searches, etc. These are all sort of AI coherent applications, so long as our data is you know, quality enough. When we think about discovery, we're more looking at, you know, show me all the research papers that have to do with this topic and this topic together and just splash it in front of me. And then maybe sort them by, you know, whatever criteria, recency, right? Well, when they were published, for example. I don't necessarily know what's going to come across my screen. I'm not exactly sure what I'm looking for. I just want to know who's bumbled into ideas before. And I don't want to take 3 days manually combing through 100 research docs. I just want to see the top five most recent ones and see if there's any fresh ideas. And you know what? If not, I'm moving on. But if so, I just save myself, you know, a day of time, and I'm going to be able to start running with some good ideas. That's more on the discovery side, being able to kind of find correlations and connections between data that maybe we just simply couldn't before because it wasn't enriched enough, it wasn't sorted and structured enough, and we didn't have tools that could do that kind of correlative search.
Yeah, and when you're talking, Daniel, you're starting to make the lights go off in my head about how this could be leveraged more so in search. The first step in drug development is that identification of chemical compounds and the biology of them, which is known and tracked and understood by, you know, chemists and researchers and pharmacists. And I could see how using discovery on those compounds to now add something else in, another data point to add in, to be able to come out with an outcome per se in the data lab to once again accelerate drug development. So that was an excellent explanation of search and discovery. I appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. So yeah, just you know, for the sake of your listeners, certainly, you know, a lot of what we're doing in life sciences in the enterprise, we work with startups as well, but the 80% of our work is enterprise customers. Drug development is a big part of what's on the table, but there are other applications, right? There's plenty of AI applications that don't necessarily apply to pharma specifically, things like recruiting for talent, things like understanding our marketing messaging by, you know, combing through social media and online forums and being able to find kind of what people think of our products. These are things that, you know, an e-commerce company or a retail company or whatever could also do. But in terms of specific to pharma and specific to drug discovery, those three phases, honestly, for the next 2 to 3 years, I think are going to be the hot areas. And those are going to be the initial kind of puncture holes where, you know, some companies are able to really make progress and speed up their workflows in a substantial way.
So in your assessment of the marketplace, not the specific company, but the specific concept, where do we go from? An example is, I remember the first iPhone came out and everybody was just freaked out because it was just amazing. I can listen to my music, I can make a phone call, I can text, I can get email. We thought that was the best thing in the world. Now I look at the, you know, iPhone, what is it, the X or the 11 or the 12 or goodness gracious, the things that are happening. That's all happened in less than 10 to 15 years. Where do you think for drug development specifically, who is going to be the innovators in concept to make this leapfrog to that next level? For example, the concepts that you're talking about now sounds like we're still at phase one or phase two.
Yep.
What's your imagination telling you about phase 10?
Yeah, well, you know, phase 10 is a little bit tough to imagine, but I can certainly look ahead. I've actually written a good deal about the very long-term consequences of AI, like 40 years out and kind of the post-human transition, but that's its own podcast, Todd. And yes. I don't know if your audience is all that excited to hear about that stuff. But yeah, in terms of sort of where things are going longer term, where transformation is, a dynamic that fascinates me in life sciences is how much of that transformation is going to happen with the really cutting edge players that are trying to build from the ground up with data science kind of in their DNA versus the evolution of the giants like the J&Js and like the Roches, who we cover in depth on emerge.com. There's going to be this sort of battle between the two, and I'm not exactly certain as to whether, you know, it is not, let me just put it this way, it is not inevitable to me that the kind of evolving dinosaurs will necessarily, you know, be the winners in this field. It is not self-evident as to whether or not they can get used to integrating the oil and water of data science and life science as it currently stands within large life sciences enterprises, you know, getting those teams to work together in fruitful ways, politics minimal ways, has historically not been super simple. And I think that there's going to be a lot of transformation in the companies that kind of begin from day one with AI in their DNA. What I can speak to in terms of who will get farthest ahead, I suspect, is folks with a narrow enough focus, as well as a big enough market to potentially be able to crack this nut. So we had talked before about how hard it is to correlate and use data like, you know, subjective tummy ache scale, you know, when I call you randomly at 5:30 and hope you're not at your kid's soccer game. Like, that is borderline meaningless information when it comes to training AI systems. What we need to be able to do, and what companies I think are chiseling away at trying to find, you know, there's companies like Benevolent.ai, who, you know, we've interviewed some of their AI leadership, who is, I think, trying to do this, kind of beginning from the ground up with AI in their DNA. These folks are going to need to focus on big markets, that's number one, but they're going to need to focus on kind of data clusters, things that are correlatable, things that are reliable enough to be able to actually train algorithms on to consistently mine a lot of value from. So getting a hold of that data is a big deal. You see partnerships, like there's that big Melody partnership, M-E-L-L-O-D-D-Y. I forget the abbreviation, but you know, that's what it is. Some big European partnership of a whole bunch of pharma firms, J&J's in there, among others, where folks are trying to pool their data and sort of maybe find insights from the data of their quote unquote competitors so that everybody kind of levels up a bit. I think the folks who can decide not just how much data we get, but the folks who can find the domains of data where insights can be reliably gleaned. They can narrow their bound of what they're actually training these systems on in ways that are not too narrow where there's no insights, but narrow enough where it's reliable and we can really train algorithms. And I suspect oncology is really hot to trot there because there's just so much money going into that space. It's such a big global issue. You know, there's some question of sort of, you know, other various and sundry diseases, but tough to say what phase 10 looks like, Todd, but what I will say is whoever cracks this and yanks ahead of the competition is going to find a narrow enough domain where they're just mining insights so reliably that they're able to turn out solutions for patients at a fast enough clip where it is evident that they're leaving the competition behind. That's all that I can say with relative certainty, but I think that is the race that these giants and these newer firms are in right now.
So I don't think, Daniel, and correct me if I'm wrong, that there's been ever a marketed medication in market today that has actually utilized artificial intelligence in development. Or do you know of one that actually did?
There's claims. When I gave this talk for the OECD, around the future of pharma. And there was a number of mentions of, hey, you know, here's a press release around what AI is doing. You know, AI invents the first drug that's actually, you know, used or something. And, you know, these claims are really nascent, really flim-flam type claims. What I can say with certainty, Todd, so things that get press are things that are really appealing to people that don't understand things. So, with artificial intelligence, a lot of our job is cutting through the hype in a substantial way. So, you know, AI invents XYZ drug. Certainly that is not the case. I've told you, even for taking in PDFs and storing them reliably, we need a tremendous amount of human intelligence to structure, guide, and train that relatively dumb machine learning system to help us drive some efficiencies and speed up some workflows. So what I can tell you with certainty, Todd, is that AI has not developed any drug. You know, AI is not a person. It does not have a will. It does not come up with creative drug ideas right now. It might be able to help humans find correlations and help humans find new pathways to sort of get somewhere faster, help humans achieve some particular workflows with a little bit more speed. But AI has not created any drugs. Now, to say, Todd, that no drug currently on the market today has at any point in its workflow been touched by AI probably would be false as well. Even if it's as simple as, you know, a drug that in part was helped to develop by some kind of a search and discovery program, by even some basic natural language processing for research papers that just help people come up with the initial idea, by maybe some scanned resources that were not previously searchable, that, you know, maybe physical files or PDF files that now have been sort of taken into our system with optical character recognition. So now they're also searchable in our databases. To say that no drug on the market at some point was touched by a workflow influenced by AI is also probably false. So we're on neither extreme, Todd, but if we're closer to one than the other, we're definitely closer to the early days rather than the later days conversation. There might be a few drugs that, you know, some of their workflows were lightly informed by artificial intelligence. I think moving forward, these tools will be par for the course. These tools will be what digital transformation implies. And, you know, maybe it's 2 years, maybe it's 3 years from now, if any of the, you know, global top 10 are coming out with a new drug, probably somewhere in the workflow 3 years from today, artificial intelligence sort of at least purportedly helped them do part of the workflow. AI does not get the credit for the drug, but it hopefully gets credit with driving some efficiencies and then moving things along a little bit faster than they would have otherwise.
Daniel, this has been fascinating. You're getting me excited because you're really giving us things to think about in the realm of pharmaceuticals and drug therapy. Emerj.com. That's EMERJ.com. I will have that in the show notes. On the website for listeners, there is a very interesting section called Insights, as well as the podcast, AI in Business Podcast, which Daniel is the host, and I am now subscribed to. So,
hey, cool.
As a fellow podcaster.
Touche. I'll be listening to you here as well, Todd. So I'm glad you were able to have me on the program. And yeah, if your listeners want to check us out, emerj.com, or tune into AI in Business. We've got that episode with Metadata coming up, which is about the future of life sciences, so people might like it. But glad to be here with you, and thanks for having me on the program.
That's awesome. We were on the show today with Emerj, Daniel Fagella. He is a thought leader, and take credit for that, Daniel. You're helping to set the stage for the future, and where we're going to be in 25 years from now, who knows, but you can say that you were part of it.
You bet, man. Same to you. Glad to be here.
Thank you for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Nation. As always, please subscribe through Apple or your favorite podcast player. And we thank you for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast.